fascinating. Gadgets, gizmos, and gear-based technologies. Welcome to FGGBT. Now, this is the show that takes your favorite fictional science and technology, and we make it a reality. We are the Brain Trust. I am the analytical mastermind, Daniel J. Glenn. With me, the physics phenom, Dr. Michael Denon.
Dan, it is great to be here and great to be reminded how much I just like chimpanzees. So, you know, we'll just leave it at that.
I like chimpanzees as well. And I really like a man who is more often than not compared to a smart chimpanzee. And that is our enigmatic engineer, Ben Siepser. Ben, how are things going up there on the brain station?
You know, Dan, I want to hear stories of all the great apes. So I've been thinking we should team up on this one and teach screenwriting to the chimps, the gorillas, the orangutans, and the bonobos. You know, they have some wild stories to tell, and I want to see and hear them, Dan.
Well, I'm sure you've heard the adage, Ben, that if you put enough monkeys in a room with a typewriter, eventually you'll get Shakespeare. So we just need enough of the monkeys, and that way I wouldn't even have to teach at all. We would just end up with all sorts of screenwriting, I'm guessing. But that's infinity, though. Infinity's got to be worked in there as well.
It's worse than that. It's worse than that, Dan. You've just set us up. You've mixed the apes and the monkeys. We are now going to be protested by chimpanzees around the world. We've lost our chimpanzee audience, Dan.
I know.
I mean, you know, we may have gotten the monkey audience, though. And I don't know numerically which is bigger. So, hey, maybe it's a win.
I do like the implication, though, that there would then be millions of apes and not the, like, hundreds of thousands we actually, unfortunately, only have now.
That is true. This, you know, but I think my point is whether the ape or monkey, we'll put apes in there, too. We can put apes. I don't care who comes to my class.
Right.
Bring everyone, you know. But this is interesting because it pairs with our previous episode. This is really our Flintstones 2.0. You know, this is human beings getting blasted back to the Stone Age in a very different way as we explore the Planet of the Apes series. And, you know, I want to talk about the original because I think, like all science fiction, good science fiction, I should say, it kind of broke ground, broke boundaries, blazed a trail that we see today. And this is kind of interesting because basically it's about a group of astronauts going back to their home planet, and they end up on a planet that seems to have the reverse. Apes have taken over the planet, and it's humans who are in captivity. And this becomes very startling for our human protagonist as he's suddenly thrust into captivity, face to feel what it's like to be an ape in our world. He becomes basically an ape in their world.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Dan, I think everything you said is true. I love the shout out to the breaking ground here in science fiction. You have put a more disturbing image in my brain at the moment. I totally agree. This is our analogy, the Flintstones episode. And now I'm picturing a bunch of apes running around in stone cars with like I don't know, people on the thing that they squeeze and the people honk. You know, people standing outside the shower holding a hose to be their
holding
shower. You know, I'm just trying to figure out all the different ways that people can be the appliances in my new movie, you know, Planet of the Apes, The Flintstones Revisited.
Yeah. What, you'd have a mouthful of water. You wouldn't have a hose. You'd have a mouthful of water spraying it on the chest.
I was trying to figure out, is it really a mouthful of water? Do we hold that much water, or are we holding hoses? I was maybe going in the gross urinating direction, but that just, I rejected that because I do want the PG or G rating for my movie.
Yeah. All I know is I don't want to be the garbage disposal one like they have in the Flintstones.
No. And just to keep in mind, Denon, you know, chimpanzees are known to throw their own poop. So,
right,
you know,
exactly.
Being clean is not high on their list. It's a little different than human beings.
Okay.
So we might be all right. But this is, you know, what's interesting about this movie, and now we're talking about the original first, is that it appears that at one point humans did rule this planet, but they've lost almost all of that technological advancement. And that is just really interesting. There's even, you know, outside of Charlton Heston's character, I forget his name right now, that none of the humans even speak. You know, it's not that they're not capable of doing so. They just don't do it anymore. And this is, to me, it's super interesting how you could have one group who was on top suddenly devolve at such a rapid pace. I think they're only gone from Earth from, like, you know, 1,300 years or something like that. You know, so it's a small time scale to have such a gigantic leap.
Well, I think one of the things you just said, Dan, that I realized I never processed watching this movie is the difference between losing speech and language and not using speech and language.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think those could happen on very different timescales, right? I could imagine a world where it just kind of the humans maybe have sort of secret sign language, secret communication, and they've learned it's in their best interest, right? They're punished less if they don't talk, right? And mm-hmm. that sort of developed as a cultural thing versus a true biological evolution. And I think that's kind of an interesting question. I hadn't really thought of it until you framed it that way.
Yeah. Well, and when you think about human speech, so much of it comes from being spoken to when you're a baby. And so if you lose that continuity of language, it's very reasonable that very quickly you would lose the language itself and that functional usage, and you'd be back to grunts and sign language and things like our much earlier ancestors used.
Yeah, and some of my high school classmates. You know, I would also think, you know, it's interesting how, you know, when you think about what we use speech for, right? Dan, you bring up an interesting point, because you could easily see a tribe on, you know, on our planet that maybe was in the jungle and had lots of animals with better hearing than them. And so in order to keep themselves quiet and, you know, increase the stealth factor, you do have to be a little more silent as a society, you know, and you could easily see forms of sign language coming in. That's very silent. We've talked about that on a previous episode as well. So, yeah, I mean, communication will always be there. That is a hallmark of being human, but it doesn't have to be verbal or vocal or audible, you know, to communicate.
Well, I mean, we know body language, and we've talked about favorite word, pheromones, or fear gnomes, or far gnomes, or whatever they are, you know.
Now I've lost it.
Yeah. I know, sorry, I didn't mean to do that to you, Dan.
Pheromones.
but maybe we develop chemical communication. That would be really fun and cool. Like, you know, we communicate through scents. That would be an interesting thing to develop. I mean, because another thing we've talked about, I think, in episodes is how the brain can adapt, right? And use different centers of the brain with different senses, right? And it'd be really interesting to see how that language processing part of the brain, what it would be like to do it through a different sense entirely rather than the, you know, audio verbal sense.
With smell, at least, we would need to evolve better olfactory receptors and things like that, and more of them. But, you know, that's not a crazy mutation either. That's just adding more of what we already have. So, you know, it might be unlikely in 1,000 years, but it's not completely unrealistic.
And I will also say, you know, just to harken back to our previous episode on Fallout, when you're living in a bunker and you've got your, you know, your next door neighbor constantly says pheromones instead of pheromones over the course of 100 years, that word's going to be completely eliminated from your vocabulary.
Yes, exactly.
So, you know, for those who didn't think it's happened, it's happening right here in front of your very eyes. So that's the original Planet of the Apes. And so we have a world where apes are in charge, humans are not, and, you know, things are weird for the humans, but pretty normal for the apes. And then we go, you know, we took a look at Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which is a newer film that is meant to be a prequel. And in this prequel, we learn that there is a chemical called ALZ-12, which uses gene therapy. It's supposed to be an Alzheimer's medication designed to kind of help repair, you know, neurons in human brains. And as a side effect, as most pharmaceuticals have some amazing side effect, that it makes chimpanzees smarter in a lab. And it turns out that makes all apes smarter. This is kind of, you know, an interesting thought experiment, right? Like, what if we could take an animal that is so close to us and on the evolutionary path went with strength instead of excessive intelligence, and instead we give them the intelligence? That, I think, it's an interesting thought experiment, Denon, and I think to make something that we don't think is being highly intelligent, incredibly intelligent, raising the IQ, you know, magnitudes.
You know, it's very interesting, and I think what's most interesting to me is it really goes to the difference between amount of intelligence and type of intelligence, right? Okay. I think we tend to think of intelligence in quantities, but I really think it's much more in qualities, right? And we see that now with our own technology, right? As we look at computers being able to do stuff, we're struggling with this idea of, okay, well, what just is intelligence? And you look at the apes, mm-hmm. let's take the chimpanzees and us. We are amazingly close in so many ways. Genetically, we're very close. They can do basic communication. They use some basic tools. But to your point, they never cross that real tool use, artistic, religious, intellectual, you know, language, questioning leap that we did. And we certainly did not generate the muscular structure that they did. Mm-hmm. And
our feet aren't hands, Denon.
No, they are not. They are not. Some people's are, but mine are not. My hands are barely hands. So there you go. It's hard to argue that for better or worse, humans are a dominant species on this planet. And it is our tool use that did that, right? Because it gave us incredible flexibility. And so that simple change, if you marry that tool use with extreme physical strength and characteristics, that gets even scarier in some ways, or exciting. I don't know which way you look at it.
Well, certainly help improve the chimp population. That's for sure. But
that's a great T-shirt, Ben. Help. What is it? Help improve the chimp population. Have your chimps genetically enhanced.
Don't
have your
chimps spayed or neutered. Don't spare near them. Genetically enhance their brain capacity.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
the
anti Bob Barker.
He would have been for it.
But I think it's this interesting thing because, you know, as Ben said, chimps are very close to us, and you can see that chimps that are raised in human households even more so are better tool users and stuff like that. You know, and so part of it is also the society that they live in. You know, they don't have this historical societal knowledge of tool use and advanced thought that we have. And now if that's entirely because of their brain structure being less, it's probably partly that, but it's also partly that, you know, we have that niche and they're in the jungle, you know, eating fruit and murdering the random monkeys that come by. You know, we're in different environments, and you know, it doesn't take a lot of tweaking to get apes who are pretty close to us in intelligence to be just like us.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, and it's, well, I want to come back to the intelligent chimps and apes for a second. But, you know, one of the things I think is funny before we move on from the ALZ-12 is that what I think is so fascinating about it is it's a gene therapy. So it's a virus that basically is able to alter genes. As a matter of fact, in such a way where it's a permanent effect. You know, we see that some of the apes become able to pass on, sexually reproduce and have that intelligence passed on. But what they find is that it doesn't work as well, and it's temporary as an Alzheimer's cure in humans. And it's because the body, human body, fights off the virus. So of course the next logical step is to create a stronger virus, which ends up being, you know, the seeds of our own demise as human beings. And, you know, Denon, you like to say that, you know, a lab is really just nature. So this feels like, you know, a natural selection then, that we've, you know, aided by human hands.
Well, I think in some ways you're right, but I also think it shows the interesting challenges of viruses and immune systems. I mean, they make a point that the ape immune system is slightly different than the human immune system. And it's also you know, it's unclear. I mean, this is where I find science fiction around viruses interesting and tricky because, you know, the virus is fundamentally delivering genetic material to things to do stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And they tend to be pretty focused in that regard. And yes, they make the mm-hmm. virus stronger so the immune system doesn't get to it, but it should still be basically a virus that enhances, you know, brain neuron growth. But what mm-hmm. I wonder, like, what goes wrong with it? Like, is it therefore causing a neurodegenerative disease and attacking just all the nerves in your body? I get fascinated by, like, how is this virus really killing you? But to your point, Dan, some of the humans are immune to it. And in the later movies, this is why it doesn't wipe out humanity, right? It just has severe effects on humanity. And that's the other piece of viruses. There's always some people who are immune to it, you know? And yep. I think that's kind of fascinating and cool. So, yes, natural selection in very deep and interesting ways is going on here.
Yeah, well, I've got some thoughts on the how it kills you because, you know, I thought about this a lot.
That worries me, Ben. That worries
yeah,
me.
Me too. There's a gleam in your eye, the gleam of intelligence in your eye and experimentation.
I mean, if someone's developing a virus to rebuild brain cells, you'd think that would be good. But in a healthy person who doesn't need more brain cells, you have two potential problems. One, it could basically be thought of as cancer, right? If you induce uncontrolled cellular growth in the brain, that could be a tumor, a brain tumor that then, you know, kills you eventually. But it could also be a much simpler thing of like brain swelling, right? Like one of the things that happens when you get in like a car accident, right? Like a concussion, you have an internal brain bleed and that swells and damages the brain. But if you have uncontrolled healthy cell growth in your brain, there might not be enough room for it. and it swells and essentially crushes your brain and you die.
Let me say something real quick. So, because one thing, because you said, you know, you have an internal brain. If you have an external brain after a car crash, you got a real problem.
Yes.
I want to offer a theory here really quickly. Is I think maybe the viruses work really well. Your body doesn't fight them off, and they cause an inflammation in your brain, similar to what you're saying here,
exactly.
Ben. And that they work too well. And your body can't fight it off, and that's that makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, that's the clear difference between the 112 and the 113, is that the 112 is slow, and it helps the character's father, who's suffering from Alzheimer's, to, you know, build neurons back. Now, whether or not Alzheimer's is actually neurons dying and all that, you know, who really knows? But once the 113 comes in, it's more aggressive. It makes those cells grow faster, and you die like within a day or two.
Just so we all know, mm-hmm. right? This is why I am prepared to be one of the people who survives as a functional person into the ape apocalypse or the chimpanzee apocalypse. Because as you can see, I wear a hat.
Mm-hmm. I see that.
And after the apocalypse occurs, I am still wearing my hat. And it is my hat that has kept my brain under control and from exploding. You notice there was some effect on my beard. So the virus clearly was not just a neuron growth, but also, a hair growth virus. But overall, hat safety, number one tip here for avoiding the chimpanzee apocalypse.
Now, I do want to say really quickly that you're pointing to your shirt that you're promoting. You're not just talking in random strokes about your hat and your beard. For those listening at home and don't have the benefit of the visual.
Dan, we're only trying to save half the population. If you don't have the energy to watch the show, if you're just listening, I apologize that our safety tips will not prevent, prevent your death.
If you want to understand at all what Denon's talking about, check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/DanielJGlenn. And go to our website, fdbt.com/merch for all of your merchandising needs. But Ben, I'm guessing you've got something you'd like to talk
about.
Well,
you know, if you want a template for a safer brain enhancement, it's obviously the way to go is the cyborg brain, which you can see depicted in beautiful form on this lovely t-shirt I'm holding. You know, cyborg brain can't be infected by a virus. Well, at least not a biological one. You know, you do have to worry about the computer viruses.
Right.
But at least your brain won't swell and explode itself.
Yeah, and computer viruses, as of this recording, are not airborne yet. So that's a very positive step.
Well, they are wireless. Anyway.
Details. But of course, you know, if you want to fit in with this ape population, you know, they're pretty smart, so you got to be smart too. So the Analytical Mastermind t-shirt is the one I recommend, promoting hairless apes in a very hairy world. And of course, you can get all of these at fggbt.com/merch. So speaking of hairless intelligent ape, which I do count myself among those numbers, let's discuss discuss intelligent chips. You know, it's also interesting that with this particular movie and a lot of, you know, movies like this, the chimpanzee's the go-to. You know, Ben, you mentioned earlier, I believe you, I don't know how you pronounced it, and I'm not the one guy who pronounces words correctly, but I've always heard them called the bonobo. And this is basically, you know, a cousin to the chimpanzee, one that is significantly less aggressive, one that's a little more peaceful, a little more harmonious. And I'm always surprised that when most people talk about apes, they go to the chimpanzee because they're highly aggressive, you know, and very dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Yeah, but, you know, they were in some famous movies early on, Dan, and we all know.
Lancelot Link is one that they were.
We all know that, you know, as Americans, I can't speak for the rest of the world.
But you can't speak for all 330 Americans.
No.
3 million Americans.
No, I'm going to speak for all Americans, just not the world. If you are not on a TV show or in a movie, as far as we know, you don't exist. So this is why I think the chimpanzee is the go-to. We also, I don't know why, but we chose to send them into space.
They have been astronauts, that's true.
Right, and so, you know, this is why I think dogs and chimpanzees get so much press.
Yeah. I mean,
that's interesting.
Bonobos and chimps are very close, like less than 0.5% of DNA difference between the two. But, you know, chimps are the slightly closer ones and they're bigger, which is maybe better for why we use them. I don't know. But it is true that the bonobos are much nicer comparatively than the chimps. But, you know, If you're trying to do experimentation, you know, maybe that 0.5% matters. I don't know.
I don't know. All I know is that, you know, when you look at them, they are if I wanted to make an ape intelligent, I would grab a bonobo first for sure. But nonetheless, apes in general are really a formidable force. I mean, they've got a better bite. They've got feet like hands. They've got prehensile tails, some of them. Or maybe that's just in Donkey Kong Country. Oh, is that monkeys? Okay. I think I'm thinking of Donkey Kong Country. I'm mixing up my video games in real life. Okay. All right. So it's monkeys. Okay. Well, apes still have, some of them have tails, right? No, they don't have tails.
No.
I don't know what's happening here, but they're pretty cool. My point is they've got a lot of physical advantages over humans. And, you know, incredible strength. Yeah, I mean, I hate to bring up a tragedy here, but there was famous, you know, Travis the chimp who ripped off a person's face. I mean, when you read some of the stories about it, it was horrific. And, you know, that story, as I was reading it, actually paralleled the chimp, Caesar the chimp we see in Rise of the Planet of the Apes in a lot of ways, because it was someone who adopted a monkey as a baby. They were kind of normal, but there was, you know, sick members of the household. The chimp showed aggression earlier by jumping out of cars, going after people it thought was a threat. So actually very, very similar. You know, and instead of using that as a cautionary tale, I don't want to say that it was an inspiration for Rise of the Planet of the Apes, but it definitely feels like a parallel storyline.
Dan, I think it demonstrates something. I want to briefly come back to our bonobos or bonobos, or I don't know how to say them, actually. I apologize to all bonobos in the world. Maybe this just goes to show they're slightly smarter than chimps by making sure we don't pay attention to them.
Okay.
You know, I mean, because if I was sitting out there looking at what humans did to animals, I think I'd pick the please ignore me route, not the scream at you, notice me, take me in for experimentation route. So mm-hmm. I think we've just established their slight superiority intelligence over the chimps.
And that's a very Denon thing to say, by the way. It's the hide and
hide under the radar. Hide. Yeah, sit in your corner, eat your chocolate chip cookies, and don't get noticed.
yeah. Very Denon approach. I mean, it's not bad. I mean, it's kind of worked. Although, I would be interested to see more just observation, you know, from a distance and how they interact, because I find, you know, a lot of the primates at that level, just how they interact would be very interesting and show how primates in general and how we've kind of evolved as well in our way. But let's talk about just getting smarter. You know, you mentioned earlier that, Denon, that it's a little different. It's hard to quantify. It's not objective. It can be subjective. But, you know, let's just say you were to raise an IQ level overnight. I mean, some of these, the chimps in this movie become basically smarter over the course of hours. I don't know what that means. Does it mean that your brain just processes things faster? Is it calculating quicker? I definitely know people, obviously my present company is included in this, but I know people who have an intelligence that is so bizarre. One of my friends, she's so intelligent that she starts conversations in the middle expecting me to have already knew the beginning part of it. And I come in not knowing what she's talking about, but it's because that all is just, it's not, you know, it's just people think differently at higher intelligence levels, and I'm not privy to that information is what I'm saying, Denon. So as a certified genius, am I right here? What am I talking about?
I think you are, and I think it also is important to distinguish between your intelligence that allows you to learn quickly and then the actual process of learning, right?
Mm-hmm. And application, I guess.
And application, right. So I think it's an interesting question. You know, at some level, intelligence is the ability for our neurons to make new connections, the number of connections we already have, the number of neurons we have, the structure they have, all of that goes into it. So biologically, you know, you could grow some of these fairly quickly. I would think, you know, I don't know what the time scale is for neuron connection and growth, but I wasn't as bothered by that. What is interesting, though, is just look how long it takes, you know, humans to learn to talk, read, you know, communicate, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, it's happening in parallel with your brain growing, so I know it's a little complicated there, but you're sort of in those middle years, ideal for learning a second language. The brain's still growing some, but not as much. It still takes time to learn that second language. And so I think that's the piece the movie kind of has to, I think, speed up for storytelling, is it's one thing to increase your brain ability. It's the another to actually achieve those abilities in a short time.
Yeah. Well, and there's an implication that the ALZ viruses must be not just growing extra brain tissue, which is very important for adding the intelligence. Like your brain size in proportion to your body is kind of how you figure out intelligent very, very roughly. Like humans have much larger brains per, you know, pound of body than a chimp does. And that is kind of our way of knowing. But so if you increase the brain size somehow without, you know, causing cerebral issues because the skull doesn't get bigger probably. But it could also be kind of resetting and making the brain more pliable too. You know, one of the potential issues with Alzheimer's is that you're not forming those new connections anymore, which is why you're not forming memories anymore and all that other stuff. So if this virus is also kind of breaking those synapses and letting them reform or encouraging new synapses to form, you could easily see how that could benefit this fast adaption of intelligence, because it makes your brain more pliable, so you're able to go back to that young state where you can learn quickly.
Okay. I mean, well, it's interesting because you were talking about the speed and how this happens, because Caesar, who's the main ape character, is born with this increased intelligence. So you can see where it would come as he grows, right? But some of the other apes that, that he, you know, quote unquote, makes intelligent, he basically just steals some of this ALZ-12 and just sprays it willy-nilly into the
cages.
Well,
in that case, it was the 113.
All right. Different formula. But yeah, it's so they become kind of intelligent very, very quickly. You know, that is literally overnight, which would imply that the connections are there. The mass is obviously already established.
What I do like about that is that these were apes that were already in contact with humans all their whole lives, essentially, right? They were, well, maybe not, because it showed some poaching things in the beginning of the movie. But at the very least, I would, that to me, that, you know, if you're in this sanctuary where you're getting yelled at by Tom Felton, you're going to learn the language to some degree while you're there. And so when you get the spray, you're already kind of inoculated with the English language as something to have already been in your contact. Like, I think if you went to Africa and sprayed a wild population with this stuff, they wouldn't, like, know English all of a sudden because they haven't heard it before.
Right. Yeah, and they couldn't, right? Like, English is not built into your brain. And that's the interesting thing, right? There is a big difference between your capacities and what you've learned, right? Like, and learning just always takes time. It's very, very hard to speed that up in any real meaningful way. Whereas, you know, creating biological capacity to learn happens at the rate of growing connections and growing cells. So they're two very different timescales.
Well, and I guess what I'm saying is, in this, you know, when he because he kind of makes them intelligent, but they still can't talk.
Yes,
right? Caesar, and we don't even see Caesar talk until later in that first movie. But they are significantly more intelligent, obviously. But and it's also it's interesting because talking, just the ability to verbalize thought, is the hallmark of intelligence here, right? Caesar's the first one to talk. Some other apes can talk, and then they develop a rudimentary understanding of English later on. They're even, you know, writing it in other movies. But this, you know, and other moments where you see, to show intelligence in this movie, they make them look more human-like. Caesar walks upright. He is bipedal. He never puts his hands on the ground. The sclera, the whites of his eyes they're white. Chimpanzees are dark on purpose. That's an evolutionary trait, right? And so you see they become more human. And I think that's, you know, I don't know that that is the way to show intelligence. I think a chimpanzee can be intelligent without having to walk upright or having their eyes white, you know? I mean, I think for a chimpanzee, walking the way they walk is their evolutionary advantage, you know? Yeah. So I find that kind of interesting. But talking is that hallmark because it is communication. Although I'm not sure, Denon, you made a very interesting point in an earlier episode. Do chimpanzees and other apes, do they have the structures to be able to vocalize like that, to vocalize words? I know they have tongues and teeth and you know, voice box, but.
No, my understanding is no. My understanding is that, like, the range, they have the structures to make sounds, and it's the sounds they make. Right. And that humans, some birds, there's a very limited number of species, at least based on what I read 15 years ago, Dan. So maybe we've discovered new things.
In a decade and a half. It's possible, Dan. It's possible.
It's possible. It's possible. I want to acknowledge that. But the other points we've made, this is why sign language for chimps is so powerful. Yeah. Right. Sign language does not, you know, rely at all on the biology of the spoken word. It is a mental connection. And obviously they have, you know, very agile hands and the ability to do that. And so I think, you know, and sign language itself, though it can be used to express English, as we discussed in other episodes, is also largely a concept-based construct if you're not spelling out the letters. Right.
Right.
And so, so there is a component of that that I think really gets to some universal elements of communication. And to your point, though, I do like, just briefly, and you are the master of film and television, but I want to just double down on your comment that it's often in films that we use certain things to send a message to the viewer that's even subconscious, right?
Yeah.
And so these changes that they make to make Caesar seem intelligent are because the only things we associate with being intelligent right now are humans at the level that we are, right? And so you do use those tricks to make our brain just subconsciously connect these things with being intelligent.
Yeah. And you know, to some degree, chimps and all apes, you know, do have sign language already to some degree. Like they can show tool usage to their children, to their offspring. And now, you know, in some ways that's just demonstrating, but it's still a way of using their hands very precisely to teach their next generation. And I'm, you know, and also their threat displays use their hands and other things like that. So it's very clear that there is some level of visual communication between these animals in addition to their grunts and howls and all the other sounds they make.
Yeah, showing a tool that's demonstrating is communication. Communication with, you know, I mean, it's all communication, right? So this jump in intelligence, this use of tools, this sudden shift, this is what I think is really interesting, because this is the fundamental part. Without what I'm about to say, there is no Planet of the Apes, right? I mean, because this what is created is a perfect setting for a term that I've just dubbed special usurping, which is where one species usurps another species from power. And that's what happens. You know, we see a sudden technological shift where apes who are more physically endowed. I don't even think that's the right word either.
Capable.
But what's it?
Physically capable.
Capable. Thank you. Physically capable. They suddenly have our intelligence. So they become the more dominant species, and we start dying off. There's a sudden shift. And I don't think it's happened a couple times in our past, but it's just a sudden, almost overnight shift that puts apes into power and in a position where they can grab that golden ring of ultimate dominance across the globe.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's interesting, Dan, that, you know, I think there's two parts to this. One is, you know, as you mentioned, I think at the beginning, you know, it's a common use of science fiction to make commentary on life and stuff, and then you're not really worried about the science part of it as much. Right. It's a venue to do it. But what I find interesting about this is this would be an interesting real biology thought experiment, science thought experiment. They become dominant. They adopt some of our technology that exists, but a lot of it they just choose to ignore. It seems like that's the feeling I have. And I'm struggling remembering all the movies and all the tech they have, but they're certainly not like driving around in cars, right?
No, they're riding horses.
Yeah. Now, if you take this origin story at face value, right, there's no reason car technology should be lost. I mean, Caesar has learned pretty much everything he needs to learn, and he's functioning in the world, right? There's no, a car is not beyond his ability to learn how to use. And it's also clear it's not beyond his ability, I think, to learn to read and figure out how a car works, right? So one question is, are they so physically different and, quote, better, for lack of a better word, that they just choose not to use a lot of our labor-saving technology, and that's why that goes away? Like, is that one of the implications of the different physical biology, is the tools and technology they choose to double down on?
Well, in fairness, I'm not sure. I heard this in a comedy routine once, but I'm not sure that they have the structure to use a car. I think cars are built for human proportions, and I think they're out of proportions to drive our car. So they would have to build new cars that were suited for monkeys, and gorillas definitely couldn't fit in the driver's seat.
Or do what my mom did and just put really big blocks on the pedals, Dan.
Sure, I mean,
my mom sit was literally phone booths told. My mom was told by one of the, you know, it was my dad. My mom grew up in the Bronx and didn't drive. They met at grad school in Wisconsin, and she decided to get her driver's license. And a famous family story was, after one of her attempts to pass, it took many attempts, the person giving the test turned to my dad and said, "You may want to put blocks on the pedals for her to be able to reach them." So I think the chimps could redesign the basic structure of the car and be able to drive it. I do agree that the exact proportions of their arms and legs currently are probably not designed for our cars. Yeah.
Phone booths and platform shoes, and then we got a driving set of apes.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I think there's two things here. First of all, when I was reading up on Travis, that chimp that attacked the woman, I read in one of the articles about him that he drove a car at one point. So, you know, I think it's reasonable. You know, they could squish, you know, adjust the seat enough. But, you know, there's two possibilities here. One is, you know, there's not a lot of chimps in the world, right? There's like hundreds of thousands. And at the beginning of this movie, when there's like hundreds of them, right, in this colony that Caesar runs, that's not enough people. That's not enough to run the industry that is required to keep cars going, right? And if you're starting over from scratch, you know, this is something we've talked about in our energy revolution stuff. All the easy oil's gone. All the easy fossil fuels are gone. And so it's very unlikely that you could start from scratch again on fossil fuels, because they're not there anymore like they were 100 years ago when the first industrial revolution happened. And so I think the chimps just, or the apes are just kind of stuck because they don't have the easy, plentiful energy to get jump-started with like the humans did a few hundred years ago.
Interesting.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. I mean, I'm guessing that the UAW manuals up there in Detroit might be left behind. So as far as starting a union to make new cars, we could do that. But the fuel to run them is difficult to come by.
So this speaks to timing is everything. If the chimps wait just long enough that we have really good renewable energy that's easy to maintain, what you're telling me, Ben, is then they would have a much different technology that they'd preserve.
Yeah, you know, as long as they can operate photovoltaic cell factories, you know, they're definitely in better shape. but you also have to have that quick you have to somehow manage that transition between human labor and ape labor. And to do that quickly with enough persons that all the existing facilities don't get destroyed, you know, don't just fall apart due to weather and lack of maintenance, is going to be really difficult.
You do have enough humans. You know, I'm not someone who's going to, you know,
you've enslaved them.
Yeah, I'm not going to encourage enslavement. But you could get some of the humans to run those plants, work out a peace deal and get them to teach you.
You know, if it happens in a world where there isn't also simultaneous pandemic that like kills 90%+ of humans,
right?
Maybe you can pull it off.
it becomes very tricky numbers wise. Well, it's also interesting, you know, when you think about it, Planet of the Apes is about apes, you know, orangutans, gorillas, chimpanzees. I'm guessing there's some bonobos in there. They all become super intelligent and kind of rebel against human beings. But this isn't like, you know, reptilians, gigantic lizards took over the planet. This isn't insects like Thrycreens in Dark Sun, D&D reference for you, Denon. This is basically our cousins. We are just hairless apes. You know, we should be working in harmony it should be Planet of the Primates is really what this should be, and bringing them into the fold. But they give us the heave-ho. And, you know, I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, you know, Dan, I also wondered about this, and particularly with the way this movie started, right? So if you think about the original Planet of the Apes, there's an implication that there was a nuclear disaster, nuclear war of some sort. And that the order of operations was humans wiping themselves out and apes actually evolving into this niche. So it was it was sort of a slightly different situation of it, more akin to the dinosaurs getting wiped out by an asteroid and mammals rising, right?
Yeah, but in fairness, that was just a melodramatic rant by Charlton Heston smashing on the... He was speculating wildly.
He was, but I'm just going to say that's one path. Right,
and there are a lot of scientific theories that have come from lunatics ranting on a, you know, so it's not unheard of in the scientific world, but no, we don't know that for sure, but it was definitely the implication.
Definitely. But what this movie presents is an interesting different path, which is the intelligence kind of comes first by a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. And then the pandemic is wiping humans out. You could imagine the intelligence coming without the humans being wiped out. And one of my favorite science fiction series is by an author, David Brandon. It's called the Uplift series, where basically that's what we do. We actually raise the intelligence of chimpanzees and dolphins in a way that the three of us are actually living together for the most part in harmony. And that's kind of, I think, to your point, a much more intriguing outcome is, I think, it's not at all obvious, given humans and who we are, that the lines would divide between chimps and humans, right? You even see, I think, in Planet of the Apes, some sort of divisions perhaps between gorillas, orangutans, and chimps at different times, but also some alliances. I think it would be Planet of the Primates, with a lot of interesting alliances forming between different groups of primates as they are trying to master their survival together.
I think it's true. I mean, because we don't see the level, you know, we're all humans on this planet. And, you know, we can't help but each individual group feeling superior to every other group on the planet, which causes all the friction that we see here. And we're all human. We're all Homo sapiens. And these are gorillas. I mean, these are different, completely different species. They don't look, they look similar, but they don't, I mean, they look similar to us. Yeah, they don't look similar to each other. So yeah, it is interesting that they all figure it out. And I think we could do this. We could learn a lot from them, is what I'm saying. You could learn a lot by watching an intelligent ape.
I mean, based on the genetics, you know, gorillas are just as related to us as they are to chimps. There's this interesting dichotomy there that, like, it's not unreasonable, I think, for all of the apes to come together. I mean, I would certainly want to be friends with the orangutan. You know, you see, I think it's Maurice, the village elder one in the movies. You know, he seems like a bright guy. I want him on my side as my advisor.
He seems nice too. Yeah, not only is he smart, he seems like a guy you want to hang out with. He's got your back. You know, he goes to jail for him in the later movie.
Yeah.
I think that's important. Loyalty is important. I think. So in closing here, guys, you know, one of the things that I think I struggled with in the first movie is Caesar's rise, you know, because James Franco's character, you know, adopts him, raises him like a son, basically. You know, he's as intelligent as a human, if not, you know, slightly less. But I'm guessing, I think they play him off as being as intelligent as a human being. And, you know, through an unfortunate series of events, he does find himself in that quote-unquote sanctuary with the other apes. But he very quickly decides to side with the apes and break them free, you know, and run amok all over San Francisco. And I found this kind of shocking. Because I felt like, given his connection to James Franco and a real love that existed between them, you know, parent to son, you know, Denon, you've got children. You know, could you imagine one of your daughters, you found out that she was a chimpanzee and she runs off and you take her to the zoo and all of a sudden she jumps into the pen and turns against you and your family? I mean, that feels to me like an analogous situation. How would you deal with that?
That's an interesting question. And I think, I feel like what my daughters might do and what would be analogous here, the choosing to stay and free the other chimps, I actually understood, right?
Okay. Yeah.
It's a little bit of a rejection of James Franco, but not quite. And I think like in classic movie fashion, I think there could have been some more communication there, at which point I would have joined in helping the jailbreak. Like, I would have been the person, you know, we often talk about having the person on the inside. I would have been the person on the outside that helps, right? I think sure. I think together we could have strategically done this very well. And I would have been all in for a jailbreak of chimps. I think the weird thing for me was how quickly it devolved once they broke free and how violent it became there versus I really feel like Caesar is smart enough and should be a cool enough tactician. I think they should have gone full on chimp ninja.
Okay.
You know, a la our Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle episode, right? Not chimp blow things up in daylight. I don't know what that is, right? Like and I hope I've trained my daughters in the appropriate tactics of stealth, hiding in the shadows, waiting your time and not being so, you know, obvious and frontal, Dan.
Right.
So, you know, I'm just saying, you know, you asked my opinion. I think I mentioned, you know, what a great father I am in various episodes, like the past one. And I do feel I've trained ninja commandos rather than the you know, frontal assault commandos.
Yeah. The path of the Denon is strong.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, they did at least, like, do the first part of the jailbreak, I think, in the early morning slash night.
Yes, that was good. That was very stealthy. Come in.
And at least for San Francisco, they were smart enough to know the weather patterns, which is foggy in the morning, so that they could get over the bridge. Climb up the bridge and not be seen.
Yeah.
You know, very smart there. So, you know, I think to some degree they planned ahead. You know, maybe it would have been better if they'd broken out at 8 p.m. and gone done the whole thing at night. But, you know, sometimes, you know, necessity is, you know, unfortunately, when you can do the breakout is when you can do the breakout.
Yeah, it is true. And that might be the second most famous breakout in San Francisco history. And one that was definitely easier than the one on the little island just to the north. I don't know. This was one of those things I struggled with, Denon. And, you know, I couldn't imagine. The closest I can come is if my dog suddenly turned on me and joined a pack of wild wolves. And those wolves attacked me and you know, my friends and family. I would feel betrayed, and that's how I feel.
Keep
like
in mind,
Caesar.
In the woods, Caesar does protect him, right?
Yeah, that's
Caesar
that's,
makes sure he does not get killed. Your dog would protect you from that wild pack of wolves, Dan. Feel assured.
I would. Feel assured. That's the least they could do is protect you from not getting killed. I mean, that's to be expected, Denon.
It is. But there's at least one thing you don't have to worry about.
Yeah, it's the people like me who don't have a dog that escaped into the pack that are in trouble, I think.
You're toast. You're toast, Ben, which is very unfortunate. But luckily, you know, what's also unfortunate is we've come to the end of this episode. But we're not going to finish it before we've done our errors, additions, and omissions section. Things we wanted to talk about, but we didn't quite get to. Denon, is there anything about Jailbreak, your daughter being a chimpanzee, or even your love of ape culture that you wanted to discuss?
Yeah, there's two things in the movie that I both enjoyed and found funny. One was the orangutan is apparently as intelligent and good at signing sign language as Caesar is, without having had a drug, simply by having worked in a circus. You know, so it just shows all those kids out there, you know, who choose not to go to college but go to the circus instead.
Yeah.
There are some advantages there. And as a professor, I would never find myself recommending that. But based on this movie, I feel I have to. The other amazing thing was we think of rabbits as being the prolific animals of the, you know, that reproduce quickly. It was amazing to me how quickly those chimps reproduced on the way from the original jailbreak to the end of the San Francisco Bridge, because that was like some sort of exponential reproducing on the timescale of hours.
Yeah. So. Fantastic. Yeah, they multiplied like bacteria. That was pretty impressive. And I will tell you, just on the note, one of my early Fascinating Nouns episodes is with a man who ran away and joined the circus, went to clown college instead of traditional college. So it does happen. What about you, Ben? Anything you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, Dan, you know, I think for me, the thing that the people in this movie really need to learn is do not try to fight an ape close up, hand to hand. You know, this police blockade during the fight on the Golden Gate Bridge. You know, they let the apes get close, and it was not a good sign. All these apes are so strong. Don't even try. You know.
And these are ones that don't have definite follow the path of the Denon and don't have ninja skills. This is just a regular, standard run-of-the-mill ape.
And the other thing is, you know, you hear James Franco complaining at the beginning how he's been working on this drug for 5.5 years and it's time for them to finally do something with it. And I'm like, 5.5 years is nothing for like an Alzheimer's drug. So there's been Alzheimer's drugs that have been worked for decades that never went anywhere. You know, you'd think someone in that industry would know to have more patience than that.
Not this generation, Ben. Everyone wants it now. They want it now, just like Veruca Salt, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I've got a couple things here. First of all, you know, I really question James Franco's decision to take home a baby chimp. look, I'm not going to lie. Caesar's very adorable. He's cute. But anyone who thinks that a monkey or an ape is a good pet, you're out of your mind. They're very dangerous. But I do understand the drive. But you fight that urge. And the last thing is in the original Planet of the Apes, I think Dr. Zaius mentions the Anti-Vivisection League, which is such a strange group. I don't know why that struck me as very funny. But yeah, I'm all for anti-vivisection. I'm anti-vivisection myself. But if you find yourself not wanting to be chopped up into a million pieces, that's great. And you can tell us about it. You can find us on social media. You can find the show. We are on X, formerly Twitter, at FGGBTpod. We are on Facebook, at FGGBT, website fgGBT.com, and you can get in touch with us via email questions@fgGBT.com. But you can get in touch with us individually. Denon, where can people find you?
Well, there's a bunch of places where you have to flip my name and it becomes Denon Michael. That's X, Instagram. My website is denonmichael.com. Facebook, you keep the Denon Michael, but you stick a prof in there at that prof Denon Michael. And then YouTube, I got on it a long time ago, and the other Michael Denon apparently didn't grab YouTube. So on YouTube, I am just at Michael Denon. And I do have a bunch of stuff out there under the brand Physics of X, where X is everything except politics. That's on YouTube and Instagram. So fun places to find me, Dan.
Very good. And I won't even get involved. I think you nailed it. There's no reason for me to put my grubby little my damn dirty paws all over your social media. What about you, Ben? Where can people find you?
People can find me on all the major social media networks at B Seepser.
How do you spell that?
Spell that BSIEPSER.
Are you excited that Seepser is pretty close to Simeon? Ben Simeon? No.
You know, It's certainly a good thing.
Is that when your family came over at Ellis Island? There were the Simeons, and they certain it to the Seepsers. Happened. It happened to us all. I was Gorilla before I was Glenn. If you want to get in touch with me, I am on X, formerly Twitter, at Daniel J. Glenn, Instagram at the Daniel J. Glenn, on Facebook at Analytical Mastermind, and I have a website, danieljglenn.com.
And if you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, please rate, review, and subscribe.
And if you're watching us on YouTube, hit the like button, subscribe, and ring that bell so you never miss an episode. And leave us a comment telling us your favorite grade ape.
There are plenty to choose from. They are all great, in my opinion, Ben. But of course, if you happen to be ape or human or any other form of primate or even highly advanced insect, you can take all the information we've given you and you can do evil with it. But please don't do that. Never do that. That is what people who want to take over the world, if they have an interest in world domination, and that shouldn't be you when you're given that choice. Always choose superhero, never supervillain. So until next time, thank you for listening.
Fascinating Gadgets, Gizmos, and Gear-Based Technologies is a Glencoe production and is produced by me, Daniel J. Glenn. The Fascinating Gadgets, Gizmos, and Gear-Based Technologies introduction was produced by Daniel J. Glenn and Paul Springers, with music and sound design written and performed by Paul Springers.
Now, of course, if you're listening to this episode and you've gotten this far, you're going to want to subscribe. Well, how do you do that? We're on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. But if you're not already subscribed to those platforms, I made it easy for you. Go to our website, fggbt.com. You'll find links to those subscribe buttons and also links to our social media, both for the show and for our individual experts, the members of the Brain Trust. That's all right there. fggbt.com. And before you leave, don't forget to check out our other episodes. You can find the link at the top of the page for everything we've got, and you'll notice that we've got both a YouTube version and an audio-only version. Depending on what you like, we got it for you. And if you do like those videos, you can go ahead and subscribe to those as well. We're on youtube.com/DanielJGlenn. And once again, if you like this show, you're going to like everything that I do. Go to danieljglenn.com to find out more. Thank you for listening.